Christ is risen.
Truly is risen.
Today we read from one of the matinal resurrectional gospels. There are 11 of them, and there are not 11 weeks during Pascha before Pentecost. Since Pentecost is 50 days after Pascha, there's not 11 weeks. There's not time to have a reading every Sunday. We always have a matinal resurrectional reading every Sunday that covers 7, right? Because you don't read it on Pentecost. So 7 Sundays. But you have to do something with the other readings. Because since these readings are about the resurrection, the church wants to make sure they all get read during the Paschal period. So that's why we're reading Luke right now. As far as why on Bright Tuesday we read it, I don't know. But I do know that we read this gospel so that we can fit everything in. Now, we'll have the Sunday of the Myrrh Bearers, and that'll be one of the resurrectional gospels from Mark. And then, of course, the Sunday of St. Thomas, and we'll read the resurrectional gospel of St. Thomas during liturgy. So that covers 3 gospels out of the sequence. So I guess you'd need to find time for one more, and I don't know where that one is. I don't remember. But that's why we read this resurrectional gospel now, sort of out of sequence, because we're reading the gospel of St. John, since St. John is about the application of the resurrection, much more so than the other gospels are. So it's apropos that St. John would be read starting with Pascha and through the Pentecostarian season. Yesterday I got all exegetical on you because I think it's good to learn things about the scriptures that are details, background, typology, etc., because that will assist you in having the scripture penetrate into your heart. Just knowing that stuff is not the purpose in and of itself. It's knowing it so that when you read things, then your heart has that background and things can jump out at you. And so this gospel has references to the prophets, etc. And then it also says that Jesus, when he was walking on the way to Emmaus with Cleopas and Luke, who was telling the story but not mentioning his name, it has to be Luke, because not only is it in Luke's gospel, but this is a very intimate story with a lot of intimate details, and only Luke would be able to tell it since he experienced it. But when they didn't understand, they said that you are a stranger, and don't you understand what happened, and we thought that this was the Messiah, but our rulers crucified him. They clearly did not believe that Jesus was Messiah at that point. Their hearts were crushed. So Jesus rebukes them, and they still don't know it's him. We don't know why they didn't know it was him. It says their eyes were holden that they might not see him. What does that mean? I don't know. You can wonder about it. Did Jesus change his appearance? I don't think so. I think actually he wasn't who they expected him to be, because they expected Jesus to be dead in the ground. And there was so much grief that they were confused. And they just didn't see him as he was. Some people think maybe he changed his appearance. I personally think that grief changed his appearance. The grief of the apostles changed his appearance as they were walking on the way to Emmaus. So when he rebuked them, he said, "Oh, slow of heart to believe all the things the prophet said." And then he expounded all the things in the scriptures concerning himself. And that's an important sentence, because I've told you many times, in the scriptures, in the Old Testament, every page is about Jesus Christ. Everything. You really can't find a page that's not about Jesus Christ. I defy you to find 2 psalms in a row that don't have an explicit reference to Jesus Christ. It's all over the Old Testament. Everything is about Jesus Christ, because Jesus Christ is the express image of the Father, and he is our way of seeing the Father and being with the Father. And he was prophesied right at the beginning when, or the incarnation was prophesied, when Adam and Eve were being cast out of the garden, and the prophecy was made that, you know, the serpent would bite at the heel, she would crush his head, meaning from Eve, will come, Jesus Christ, related to Eve, and will crush the serpent. And so this is very important. When you read the Old Testament, you read it in order to see Christ. I mean, you don't read it to figure out all the complex fasting rules and all the complex washings and all that sort of stuff. You read it to see Christ. That's what you do. Now, when I read this story, I'm really filled with happiness. Because I'm the kind of guy that would be like Luke and Cleopas. And to be honest with you, I've known a lot of people as a pastor, and I haven't known too many other people that wouldn't be like Luke and Cleopas. The ones that believe and ones that struggle. Now, I've known a lot of people that don't necessarily struggle so much, and this stuff wouldn't occur to them because it wouldn't be really on their radar. But if you're struggling, there's always a dialogue with doubt, and there's always a struggling with our weaknesses that impair us. They impair our understanding. They impair our actions and activities. They really just mess things up. Sin, passion, messes things up and makes it hard to understand things. And so I very much identify with Luke and Cleopas. They loved the Lord fiercely. They'd been with him all those years, those 3 years, and yet, despite the fact that he told them clearly what was going to happen, and then it happened. When he died, they thought he was dead, and their hopes were dashed. And so I think if I'd been there with Luke and Cleopas, I would have had the same feeling. But Luke and Cleopas were enlightened by Christ, and the rest of the apostles too. And the reason why is because of they had that attribute that Luke mentions, that when the Lord tarried with them and stayed for the meal, and then he broke bread, which of course is an indication, a type of the Eucharist, their eyes were opened, and they saw him, and then he vanished from their sight. And then what did they say? They said, "Were not our hearts burning when he opened unto us the scriptures on the way?" So, if you're a sinner, okay. If you're weak, all right. God is not impressed. As a pastor, I'm not impressed if a person's a sinner or if they're weak. What frightens me, though, is when they don't have zeal. They can be really pretty good people, you know, not really get into much mischief, have a lot of self-control. But if they don't have zeal, I'm frightened for their soul. Luke and Cleopas had a lot of zeal. And so even though they were confused, their hearts were burning in them. That means that they had this deep desire to know God. They just didn't know how to go about doing it because they were so sad. And they just couldn't figure it out. But the Lord figured it out for them. And that's why I love this reading. And I think that it applies so well to our spiritual lives. There's a lot of times in my life, and I think in your guys' lives too, that there's just things that you're going, I don't know what to do next. I wish I hadn't done that. I wish I would stop doing this. I wish I would start doing that. I can't figure out how to make it right. And other times you're just confused about things, confused about why is there so much evil in the world? Why is there so much sadness? The grief over that kind of thing can really crush us. It crushes me all the time. But in some small way, my heart is burning. And that's why I talk to you about cultivating your heart being burning. Really, I hope that if ever anybody after my death says, what did he preach about? What was he about? I hope that's one of the things that comes up, because I talk about it all the time. I talk about purpose in life, and I talk about this aspect of we must cultivate this love and desire for God, and it must permeate our lives. In reading the Gospels, in struggling to love our neighbor, in just pushing through all of our weaknesses, because there's purpose in what we do if it makes us become what we are destined to become. And so I take great consolation from this reading, because just like Luke and Cleopas, so are you. So there's a lot of stuff you don't understand. Make sure your heart burns for God. That's all. Make sure you pray. Make sure you fast. If you fast poorly, at least fast poorly. But don't ignore it. If you pray poorly, at least pray poorly, but don't ignore it. If you don't read consistently, well, at least read and beg God to help you. And especially be aware of the needs of your brothers and sisters, everybody. Not just the people in your immediate orbit, you know, your family and friends and coworkers, but also everybody. Everybody is really having a terrible time and having a big struggle. Everybody. It's one thing I really learned as a pastor. And I've sort of had this thought experiment. I would love for everyone to be a pastor for one day and sort of have the summation of my pastoral experiences in the past 18 years and recognize that we're all the same. We all get sad. We all get confused. We all have habits that are hard to break. We're all the same. We're all weak. But God takes weakness and makes it strength. All you need to do. Of course, it's a hard thing to do, but it gets easier. Is just have your heart burn for God. And all those details about all those bad habits and all those sins and all those dysfunctional relationships and everything else, it's going to be resolved. That's really fundamentally why I became an Orthodox Christian. When I first became a believer in Christ, I didn't have that theological understanding. I just had that kind of simple, more or less partially true idea. And with a lot of that added, you know, medieval kind of satisfaction atonement theory. And it wasn't personal. And it didn't feel alive to me. And it didn't feel like it ministered to who I was as a human being and who I knew other people were as human beings, because I've always had intuition that people are basically the same. But Orthodox Christianity ministers to the person, to us in all of our weakness. I mean, come on, Luke and Cleopas had heard all the prophecies. And then this stranger comes in and says, well, you know what? What was happening? Like, really? Like, really? This person wouldn't have known what went on? They were that credulous to believe this? That a person wouldn't have known what went on? And then all of a sudden this person who says he knows nothing about what happened in Jerusalem, all of a sudden is, although I didn't technically say nothing, he just said what things, so he didn't lie, but the inference was, I didn't know what happened. And then he shows encyclopedic spiritual knowledge of the scriptures, and they're walking on the way and their heart is burning and they still don't know it's him? That's kind of dopey. But their heart was burning. And that's why they found out. And he made himself evident to them in the breaking of the bread. And then they knew. And then what did they do? They'd walked all day. They probably walked 6 hours. They ran back as fast as they could. By that time, the Lord had already appeared to Peter. And so Peter knew that he was alive. Saw him in the flesh. He'd also appeared to the myrrh-bearing women. And so when they announced that they'd seen the Lord had already made himself evident, whether it was before or after he saw them on the way to Emmaus, who knows. Just make sure that your heart burns within you for God, that that's the only thing that's important to you. If that's the case, everything's going to get resolved. That's basically what this story tells me. Boy, I love to read this story, because it's my story and it's your story. Christ is risen.
Truly is risen.